The prologue. But what of those who disappear, abandoned, lost, and full of fear? No bone of my bones or flesh of my flesh here, only dust, interspersed with strangers. The land remembers, the earth it keeps, those who wandered in their peaceful sleep. Beneath the grass, the shade, and the trees, their souls find solace. And finally, peace. It is 2013. In the gardens of remembrance, I'm visiting my sister, Vera. It's been quite some time since we last spoke. Episode 1, Our Jamaican Origins.
Flashback to 1948.
My sister, Vera, is born in Mount Charles, St. Andrew, Jamaica. This is the year of British ship Empire Windrush's much publicised voyage, bringing hundreds of West Indian wayfarers from Jamaica to the motherland.
The British had called on the West Indies for workers to help rebuild Britain after the war. But instead of warm welcomes, these voyagers are greeted with racial prejudice and discrimination.
Sometime between the mid and late 50s, Sister Vera, between 7 and 12 years old, ends up in England. No one could ever recall how, when, or who she went with. In 1955, I'm born in St. Thomas, a parish at the southeastern end of Jamaica. I'm given my phantom father's surname. On my birth registration, his full name is a row of 10 stars. I never meet him. Well, while we're here in St. Thomas, let's peer through the telescope. Back, back, back 300 years earlier. Having just captured Jamaica from the Spanish, the British import a steady stream of enslaved Africans to toil on sugarcane plantations. They also take advantage of the island's location to challenge the Spanish dominance of the Caribbean. Many of the first English settlers are landowners / enslavers. Others are pirates, approved by the government.
Buccaneers like Henry Morgan join mercenaries to attack the Spanish galleons carrying gold and silver from Central and South America to Spain.
He buys 3 large sugar plantations with his ill-gotten gains. Morgan is knighted by Charles II of England for his so-called services to the crown.
Port Royal, the unofficial capital of Jamaica, becomes home from home for privateers and buccaneers, rich with gold stolen from the Spanish. With one drinking house for every 10 residents, the place is teeming with debauched, drunken buccaneers, pirates, cutthroats and prostitutes. Even animals take part in the drinking.
It is known as the wickedest city in the world, the Sodom of the New World, the sin city of the 17th century.
And it came to pass that destruction befalls the city of sin. A day of judgment comes in the year of 1692, not with fire nor brimstone, but an almighty earthquake and tsunami that suck and swallow the city into the sea. Even in the aftermath, the debauchery continues, with some of the survivors looting and breaking into homes. They rob and strip the dead, and in some cases, hack off their bloated fingers to retrieve gold rings.
For dead men cannot point the finger, nor tales can they tell. Back to 1955, my birth year. The Jamaica Tourist Board is established to boost the tourism industry, which had begun in the late 19th century, but restricted to the wealthy, happy few. Jamaica thus becomes an all-inclusive tourist paradise, but not for the locals labouring the land lambasted by the sun.
This year, around 15,000 West Indians, mostly Jamaicans, will make the long journey to Britain.
A British Pathé newsreel entitled Our Jamaican Problem fades in.
The opening caption proclaims, "Nationwide concern is felt at the influx of British West Indians who come in search of hope."
Petitions are signed and resentment rides high against the West Indians fluxing in.
Back in Jamaica, enslavement and the rape of enslaved black women by their white male colonisers gave birth to a racial hierarchy. This in turn created a social hierarchy, putting whites at the top. people of varying shades with limited privileges in the middle,
and relegating blacks to the bottom.
This colourism will forever remain a significant issue among West Indians.
My dark-skinned mother badmouths the vainglorious brown-skinned gals of Kingston, who are, according to her, way too proud of their lighter complexion. Notwithstanding, she is also capable of looking down on Mrs. So-and-so, saying her skin is so black, which suggests she might well be ugly too. It's 1919. Mabel Eugenia Parks, alias Mrs. Mabel Telfer, alias my Goddy May, is born in Jamaica. 9 years later, 1928, my mother, Esther Eugenia Parks, Goddy May's younger sister, is born in Trinityville, St. Thomas, Jamaica. Esther very rarely speaks of my grandmother Maud, born Maudriana Lenora Parks, except to say, without going any further, that she lived a hard life and died too soon. I should, of course, have pushed for details. I know. And now there's no one left to ask. The ship has sailed. Her father, James Patterson, a farmer and devout Christian, teaches her at an early age to read the Bible and the ways of the righteous.
For he that soweth to his flesh
shall of the flesh reap corruption.
But he that soweth to the Spirit
shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting.
What a blessedness!
What a peace is mine,
leaning on the everlasting arms.
In later life, she could rage, as though possessed, with curse words, foul-mouthed and imaginative enough to make a sailor blush when she is riled, despite always being ready to quote from the Bible. Not so surprising, though, considering how much wild stuff there is in the Bible. Her Trinitarian Bible Society pocket-sized edition, with its scritter-paper-thin pages, is another of the handful of possessions of hers that I kept, as evidence that she had existed. In Jamaica, she has Vera in 1948, and me in 55, and, as I later learn from Goddy May, a secret son. I don't know when he was born, she never mentions him. I somehow gather he is raised by his father's family. The three of us all have different fathers. Irresponsible macho Jamaican men, plus the notion that children are a blessing from God, plus the absence of family planning, all add up to too many unwanted pregnancies.
Anthropologist Edith Clark, a member of the Jamaican white elite, explores this in her classic 1957 study, My Mother Who Fathered Me.
She looks at
instability rates, low marriage rates, high illegitimacy rates, reprobate father rates,
and mothers hence obliged to become de facto fathers rates. My future siblings are in generational cycle repeat mode. It's up to their offspring to wash away these traits.
November 1960.
My mother joins the exodus to England, the move to the motherland. Her head is filled with dreams. From her Aunt Mel, she borrows the fare and crosses the oceans on the revamped warship, the Ascania.
All ports from Kingston, Jamaica, stopping at Bastère, Kitts and Nevis, Montserrat, Leeward Islands, Vigo, Spain, and at long last, Southampton, England, the promised land.
Inside my mother's only ever passport, there is a solitary violet-inked triangular stamp. Not only does she never return to Jamaica, she never actually leaves the shores of Britain.
September 1961.
I'm with my Goddy May at Palisades Airport. I'm almost 6 years old, and I'm leaving our rural dwellings, never to return. With an almighty roar, our plane lunges upward and into the sky. We stop briefly at Montego Bay and New York airports, and the next day, we finally hit the ground at London Airport. All I remember of the whole thing is throwing up just before the touchdown. We are picked up by relatives and bundled over to Brixton. My first home in England, in Angel Park Gardens. We live for a short while in Great Aunt Mel's semi-detached Victorian house. She makes Jamaican wedding cakes for a living. Rum-soaked towers shrouded in inch-thick icing, with plastic bride and plastic groom perched on the top.